Hello.
Welcome back
to Behind the Crime.
We're your hosts, Rebecca Wood
and Ella Calora.
This is our first episode recording since spring break, which feels like a really long time ago already.
It really does, yeah.
It's been 2 weeks only?
Yeah, only 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been like a month since we've recorded.
Yeah. So since we were home on spring break, we kind of took inspiration for this episode. We focused on some cases that took place not necessarily in our hometowns, but in the general area. So we're both going to talk about murders that took place around where we're from.
Yeah. And Becky's going first this week.
My case is quite old. It happened in 1882.
Oh, wow.
But there's weirdly a lot of documentation on it. Like, there's a lot of information out there.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was actually the one who told me about this case originally. So this is the case of Minnie Tregwyn, who was at the time a 17-year-old girl who grew up in Port Orem, which nowadays it's just called Wharton, but it's in Morris County, New Jersey. She was born in 1865 and was known to be very lively and talkative, and she apparently took care of her mother, who was reportedly ill. Not all sources that I found said that, but a lot of them did. Her father was Samuel Tregwyn, and he was a miner because the general area was a really big mining town.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran a boarding house where other miners would live. And her mother, her name was Mary Etty Walters Tregwyn, but she went by Elizabeth.
Okay.
She was just felt like a different name.
All right.
You do you. So she had a twin sister named Edith, and she had four brothers. They were named Samuel, Richard, Nicholas, and Matthias. So like I said, her parents ran a boarding house, and it was mainly occupied by other miners, and it was iron mines. So just a brief history of the area. The Port Orem, Wharton, Dover, Mine Hill area. Mine Hill literally named after the mines.
Mm-hmm.
They were really big mining towns. I think just in Dover, I read that there was 132 iron mines.
Wow.
And they put out like 170,000 tons a year.
Mm-hmm.
So there were many Cornish immigrants, which is an area of England, who worked as the miners, and those were the most boarders in their house.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get into James Tregloun, who was one of the boarders at the house. He was 24 years old, which at the time the age gap was not obviously as significant as it would be now, and he was a suitor of Minnie for about 2 years. It's also, I wanted to note that about a month before the incident that I'm going to get into, Minnie's sister died. Her twin sister died. So also only age 17. Then getting into the relationship of Minnie and James. They were engaged at some point, but there's debate over whether they broke off the engagement at some point or not. Some say that she was in love with him, but pushed away from the relationship because of how jealous he was, which both sides attest that he was, like, overbearingly jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So because of her lively personality, she often talked and joked with the other boarders, and I'm fairly certain they were all men.
Mm-hmm.
And this made James angry and jealous and reportedly abusive on certain times towards her.
Okay.
One witness claimed that she returned the engagement ring that he gave her. But others say that he was dedicated to her and madly in love, lived to serve her, and he did a lot of things for her. He woke up early in the mornings to build fires for her, scrubbed her floors, hung her clothes to dry, brought her gifts and gave her money. And they say that she made him mad by entertaining other men.
Okay.
Although I don't think she was doing anything. I don't think she was really entertaining them. I think she just spoke with them and that upset him.
Yeah.
Because he had a jealous personality.
Mm-hmm.
So now a new character comes in. Harry James was a new boarder who came to live in the Tregwyn house in 1882. He had left England in disgrace. He was discharged from the Queen's Guards for dishonorable conduct, but this wasn't known to Minnie. He was attracted to Minnie and started flirting with her and building kind of a friendship. And also, according to the newspaper, the Iron Era that I read, he was more attractive than Tregloun was.
Okay.
That was actually reported in the newspaper.
Interesting thing to put into the newspaper, but all right.
Yeah, it was also very opinionated, which was so funny, because like now in my classes, if there's even the slightest hint of an opinionated word, my professor is like, you can't use that one. But they were straight up using opinions.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see. Anyways, this obviously upset James Treglown, and a neighbor reported that during this time, Treglown said that if he couldn't have Minnie, he would kill her and himself too.
Okay.
Basically, if I can't have her, no one can.
Mm-hmm.
So the date that the whole incident went down was June 20th, 1882, where Minnie and Harry James went on a walk. They walked on the towpath of the canal toward Dover from Port Orham. After they left for the walk, Treglown went another route to follow them, and his route would allow him to cross the canal at its head and meet them at the footbridge. Harry James said Treglown came up behind them and began yelling at them and insulting them using crude language.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, after the argument, at some point during it, he took out a revolver and fired at Harry James, but he missed, and Harry James started to run away. He said he didn't think that Minnie was in any danger because he thought that Treglown loved her, so he wouldn't hurt her, so he just ran away. And while he was running, he heard another shot. This shot was the one that struck Minnie Treglown, and she was shot in the mouth.
Oh.
She apparently went up to him to try and, like, calm him down or get the gun away, something like that, mm-hmm. because it was fired at close range.
Yeah.
He also heard Minnie scream something like, "Oh, my mother," because she was the one who would take care of her because she was sick. So I guess she was in her last moments, like, thinking about her mother. But he kept running anyways until he got back to Port Orham, where he alerted people. Minnie's actual cause of death was not the gunshot. The bullet bounced off her tooth, which likely had a metal filling. There was a gash on her lip, but it is not what killed her.
Oh.
Treglown and her struggled, and he threw her in the water, which was only about 3 feet deep, but she drowned. Her official cause of death was drowning. The coroner from Morristown, Julius Drake, said the pistol wound was of trifling character, and the death was caused by drowning. There was a small wound on her lip from the bullet, and there was gunpowder in her flesh as well,
mm-hmm.
which showed that it was of close range.
Yeah.
So finding the body, Harry James alerted townspeople, and a group of men ran toward the canal, and they found signs of a struggle on the towpath by the water's edge, which is where Treglown would have pushed her in.
Mm-hmm.
And they found her hat floating nearby in the river. They then got on a boat and used it to search for her, and they found her body on the opposite side of the canal, opposite from where the struggle was. The wound on her lip and remnants of gunpowder in her skin showed that it was very close to her when she was shot,
mm-hmm.
which supports the story that she, like, came up to him. So Treglown, after he shot her and pushed her in the river, ran away to Sussex County, which is just the next county over, mm-hmm. from Morris County, and went to a farm, and there he asked the farmer, whose name was Jensen McPeak, if he could board at his house and work on the farm for him. And this was in Byram.
Just right after?
Yeah. He just ran away. And, like, that's not a short walk. That's the thing. Like, it's not a short walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's a significant distance to walk, but, or I guess run. So McPeak allowed him to stay, but obviously didn't know about his identity. And the townspeople were still searching for Treglown, mainly searching the woods, and they were all threatening to lynch him when they found him.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it was an angry mob.
Yeah.
Which is fair, because you did just murder somebody. So soon after Treglown arrived at the farm, McPeak, the farmer, was going into town. The town was Newton. And Treglown told the farmer not to tell anyone that he had a new boarder staying there or that he knew this man. Treglown knew the topic was very popular in the town and people were still searching for him. So McPeak was obviously confused by that and found it odd. So he asked why. And Treglown said he had caught another man walking with his fiance and they argued and he shot at the man but accidentally hit his fiance, who fell into the canal. He claimed the canal wasn't deep, so he assumed she was fine.
Okay.
And it wasn't deep, but she had just gotten shot in the mouth.
Yeah.
And then thrown into a canal, so it's kind of difficult for her to have gotten out, you know? So when he went into town, he reported that Treglown was on his farm, obviously, because who wouldn't report that?
Mm-hmm.
And two deputies from the Newton police went home with McPeak and arrested Treglown, and he was brought to the Newton jail. In his possession, they found the pistol with new cartridges in the chamber, and one shot had been fired, which was because he actually later tried to kill himself. He shot himself, but it got somehow lodged behind his ear and did zero damage.
Oh.
I know. So they also noticed that he had different shoes on, and he said that he lost them sometime running from the woods to Sussex County, and that he had begged a woman on the street for this new pair, which this will be relevant later on. That Saturday, they brought Treglown to Morristown, and a group of people gathered by the train station in Dover hoping to see him, but the sheriff saw this coming and drove Treglown instead of taking the train because he knew there would be a crowd of people. So when he was taken into custody, he saw a picture of him next to Minnie in the newspaper, which we'll post on our stories. And it's not a very detailed picture. Like, it's a drawing because of how long ago it was. But it shows the two of them next to each other and basically says Minnie was a victim and that he was the murderer. And when he saw himself called the murderer of Minnie, he started sobbing in custody.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You did it.
I know. And then ran away. And the other guy that ran away, too. That's a whole nother issue.
Yeah.
It was noted that he was, like, significantly bigger in stature and probably would have been able to take Treglown down.
Ugh.
That was also written in the paper. The Sunday after Minnie's murder, her funeral was held in her brother's house, and there was a really large crowd going through the house. She was buried at Orchard Street Cemetery in Dover, and her family couldn't afford a stone, so she only had a wooden cross at her gravesite without even her name. And since then, she was buried next to her twin sister. And since then, her parents have been buried there as well. And I think some of her other siblings were buried there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that only one of them has their name on a stone. And it's illegible at this point because it was just so long ago. Now I'm going to get into the trial a little bit. There was obviously a lot of evidence. There were several witnesses. There was the gun that they found, the bullet wound on her lip, and his own bullet wound, as well as the signs of struggle and his reputation of jealousy. But the shoes were another key piece. They found his missing pair of shoes stuck in the mud by the canal, which puts him...
Did he take hers?
No, he begged a woman for them on the street.
Oh, I thought that was a lie. Okay, sorry, I'm jumping to
conclusions.
No,
I think that's true, because I don't think hers would have fit him.
Okay.
And I feel like that would have been noted that she didn't have hers.
Yeah. Okay. I thought that that's where it was going.
That is a little suspicious. But no, but they found it stuck in the mud where the struggle was, which directly puts him there.
Yeah.
The trial was postponed because of another murder trial going on in the area, and he wasn't sentenced until the next year. The trial began on January 20th, and it was Judge Maggie, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. So they presided, and the jurors were reportedly a very intelligent group. That was noted in the newspaper. And the trial lasted 4 days and had a lot of attention. There were a lot of people in the courtroom watching.
Mm-hmm.
Treglown testified, and this honestly just hurt his case even more. He was adamant that the murder was not premeditated, and while testifying, he accused Minnie of being unchaste. Which, for anyone who doesn't know, basically he accused her of having premarital sex, which was not true. And also, still does not matter. But during those times, I guess he was trying to get some sympathy.
Yeah, okay.
Ultimately, he was found guilty of first-degree murder, and reportedly he didn't show any real reaction when the verdict was read. Like, he just sat still.
You know what you did.
He was sentenced to be hanged on March 21st, and a jury was appointed to observe the execution. While he was in jail, he was assigned a pastor who was supposed to try to make religious impressions on him. And there was also a woman, a rich woman, who also had a very high reputation from Morristown, who visited him frequently. His attorneys tried to reverse the sentencing many times, but it ultimately wasn't successful. They actually had a petition of 700 citizens to commute his sentence to present to the governor, but it didn't work. He was still going to be hanged.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. Shortly before he was hanged, he confessed that he lied when he called her unchaste and was convinced to lie about it in court by a fellow prisoner. When he told this lie in court, he actually lost a lot of the sympathy that he did have. Mm-hmm. Even her own mother had some sympathy towards him, which I thought was weird.
Oh.
I know. But by making this lie that everybody knew was not true, he really ruined that for himself. On his last day, he had a lot of visitors and also received a letter from Minnie's mother. He also wrote a letter to his mother, and he dictated it, and the pastor assigned to him transcribed it, and that was published in the newspaper as well, the letter he wrote.
The letter?
that he wrote to his mother, and I'm assuming his siblings, because it was signed your son and your brother. They were all still in England.
Mm-hmm.
So he was ultimately hanged for his crimes and apparently requested to be buried next to Minnie at the cemetery.
No.
Mm-mm. This was a very, like, popular topic, but luckily it didn't happen. He is in the same cemetery. He's also buried in Orchard Street Cemetery, but on a completely different side. Like, they're in opposite corners of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And another unfortunate thing is that a group of rich ladies, likely the one who was visiting him, they decided to buy him a headstone because he found Jesus. So, meanwhile, the victim has a wooden cross that obviously has not withstood the years and the weather, but he still has a gravestone.
That is...
I told you there was going to be something that made you mad.
That makes me so mad.
I know. And
he does not deserve that.
No.
He does not deserve that.
I know. There was a poem that was written about this crime in 1883 in England. We'll post it on our stories.
Yeah.
I just thought that was very interesting because something that happened in such a small town,
mm-hmm.
just being like this big thing. Orchard Street Cemetery is still active today, and you can donate to it for their historical association. But other than that, anything else we'll just post on the stories. Like, we'll post the picture that caused him to sob, and we'll post the poem,
mm-hmm.
as well as possibly the letter he wrote to his mother.
Yeah.
But that wraps it up.
All right. So my case this week is... definitely not as old as yours. Mine only happened 15 years ago. So mine is the case of Deanna Knoll. She was 36 years old when she was killed. She lived in Scranton, Pennsylvania. This took place in Tobyhanna, Pennsylvania, which is only, it's very close. It's like an hour, under an hour away from each other. So Deanna Knoll was murdered by Charles Hicks Jr. At the time of the murder, he was 34 years old. Currently, he is 49. This took place in January of 2008. On January 29th of 2008, remains of a woman were found in black trash bags along the Interstate 80 and Interstate 380. In Coolbaugh Township in Pennsylvania. They were found by transportation workers who then called the state police. When state police showed up, they also found additional body parts along Interstate 80 in the borough of Stroudsburg. So they were scattered pretty far. Stroudsburg isn't too far either. It's like a half an hour from Coolbaugh, so not too far. The victim was identified through dental records as Deanna Knoll, and the murder was quickly tied to Charles Hicks, who they were acquaintances. I couldn't find anything else on how they knew each other, if they were just friends, if they were dating. I really couldn't find anything, and I looked everywhere. And also, it was really hard to find information about this case. I couldn't even find how old he was at the time that he murdered Deanna. I had to do the math and figure it out because
It's so weird that my case from so long ago had so much information out there that I could find. I had a poem written about it, but this had like nothing.
Yeah, and it was hard to find information about Deanna. I mean, that might just be a privacy thing, but yeah, I couldn't even find the age of Charles Hicks. I had to do the math because I found his birthday, so I just did the math. But yeah, that was kind of weird. So it was quickly tied to Hicks, and a search warrant was issued at his house. Police found Deanna's severed hands. They were wrapped in newspaper, Ziploc bags, and socks filled with detergent, and they were stuffed
detergent.
Yeah, like laundry detergent to try to mask the smell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were stuck in the walls behind his toilet in his house.
Oh, no. Why there?
I don't know. He was just trying to hide them and mask the smell. That's but so you gross. Cannot, you can't mask the smell.
Not for that long.
No. So Hicks was arrested, and since there wasn't a lot of information on how this went down, I saw a couple articles that said that there was a fight that ensued. Like, she, Deanna, went over to Hick's house and there was some kind of fight, and then he got mad and killed her, but there was nothing for sure of, like, why he did this. He might just have done it. Yeah. I don't know. At the beginning of the trial, defense stated that Hicks was guilty of dismembering and scattering Deanna's body. And Hicks, through his attorneys, claimed that Deanna died of a drug overdose while visiting Hicks. And then Hicks decided to scatter her body in an attempt to conceal the true cause of her death. That's what he claimed.
That makes no sense.
Yeah. There were traces of alcohol and drugs in her body, but
who's to say he didn't do that to her?
That's what people think, that, like, he drugged her and then killed her, or that they were drinking together and then he killed her, but she didn't die of a drug overdose. Prosecution forensic pathologist Wayne Ross testified that Deanna's injuries, including lacerations and bruises, were likely created by being beaten by a long cylindrical blunt object, and that was the cause of her death.
Did they ever find what the murder weapon was, or no?
I couldn't find that anywhere either. I'm assuming they found it in his apartment or his house. Then Hicks' defense tried to claim that the injuries sustained were the result of her body being dragged across surfaces, and that the reason why she bled so much is because she had alcohol in her system, which the jury rejected as non-credible.
Good.
Yeah. In closing statements at the trial, Hicks' defense said that he is a good but troubled man whose demons led him to make these poor choices, landing him in his current situation. They had relatives and friends of his come in and testify, like, tried to make the excuse that when he was a kid, he had head trauma from sports, and that led to depression and anger, like, issues.
But was he in therapy? Like, that's not...
Well, I read that they tried to put him in therapy and get him medicine to help, but they couldn't. Like, they weren't in a place that they could get him that help. But the jury dismissed this, too, because he had a psych evaluation done before the trial even started. So after he couldn't get help, he went to drugs like cocaine, which didn't help his mood swings, obviously.
Right.
On November 17th, 2014, he was sentenced to death. But the day before his sentencing, he allegedly confessed to murdering five more women in Texas. So
he from Texas, or was he from Pennsylvania? Do you know?
So he had lived in Texas, Fort Worth, Texas, before he moved to PA. Okay. The prosecutors offered to remove the death penalty if he provided information about the Texas murders. But apparently the information that he gave was not helpful. I have a quote that they said it was non-satisfactory. So he was still sentenced to death. I couldn't find anything that he had already been executed. So I believe he's just living on in death row. But yeah, my case is shorter.
But very interesting. Like,
there was not a lot of information to find on it, which was frustrating.
I mean, I'm glad that the jury was good about dismissing things that really weren't true. Because sometimes people in juries, and it's not necessarily their fault, but it's just like human nature, they're looking for something to be sympathetic about. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And you could, you know, be sympathetic to the fact that he had these head traumas when he was a child and he couldn't get the help and support. Like, I read in another article that his family into his adult age just wasn't in the financial place to help him. And you can be sympathetic towards that. But at the end of the day, he killed someone.
Yeah.
And did not only did things. He kill someone, he then dismembered her body and
spread it around a vast area.
Yeah. Threw it in trash bags. And yeah.
Ooh, the bathroom wall part really. I cannot believe that.
Like he was keeping it like a trophy.
Yeah.
I mean, serial killers or killers do that all the time. Like they'll keep something from their victims. So all of that, it does not help your case. And I have no sympathy for you anymore.
And then the other murders he confessed to, that was probably just a last-ditch effort to be like, no, don't kill me.
Yeah, Texas police are still looking into it. The last update that I could find on any of this was from 2014. So I know that at that point, Texas authorities were looking into it because they do have, you know, unsolved murders down there. So they were going through all of those. But that can be really hard because, you know, he could have been lying. He could have been telling the truth. But, like, you don't know how many unsolved cases they have down there. They could spend years just combing through one that could maybe be linked to him.
Yeah, there's also the possibility of, even if it was true, he was doing cocaine and maybe other drugs, so it's possible he doesn't remember enough information to actually be helpful about those murders, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was convicted, which is a win. Good.
Both of them.
Yeah, but both of them were convicted.
Unfortunately, those women wanted to do him a favor because they believed he found Jesus. But at the end of the day, finding Jesus when trying to escape the death penalty, it's kind of like,
yeah,
did you really, or are you just putting on that front, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both of ours kind of had, like, once they were sentenced to death, they tried to get out of it and, like,
yeah, but in different ways, very different ways. Mm-hmm, but still,
yeah, I mean, you kill someone, you kill someone.
Yeah. And, like, the fact that he didn't show any reaction when he got sentenced, why are you then trying to reverse it? Like, you clearly were not that emotionally affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just
there's a lot of telling stuff. Like, you can plead guilty and be, like, cooperative during the whole thing. But that moment in court when you get your sentencing and there's no reaction, or, like, when there's victim impact statements, or, like, friends and families go up and talk about the victims, and you just sit there and you have no reaction, that's very telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's probably during court, like, during victim statements, that's probably a key thing for jurors. I mean, I wouldn't know. I've obviously never been a juror.
But I feel like if I was one,
seeing him not react to this emotional story would just be, like, sickening.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to bring up one more thing before we close. And it kind of came into my mind when I was trying to research this and I was having a really hard time finding information. Mm-hmm. Keeping victims' privacy, I understand that, but I found it very frustrating, like, news sources. So I just want to say, like, this is common sense. This is totally common sense, but just be careful where you're getting your information, because I saw a couple news sources that just had, like, very wrong information about this case.
I had the same
thing. And it was very hard to find good, real information because you don't want to, you know, spread the lies further.
Mm-hmm.
But also it was frustrating because I was looking at some news sources that I know to be reliable news sources, but they all neglected, and it's such a small thing, but they all neglected to add his age, which isn't that important. But, like, then I'm like, what details?
But why do you have her age? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, the reason we do this is we really feel it is important to tell victims' stories and also just to spread awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many things that can happen day to day, and people just need to be aware for their own safety.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kind of wraps us up for this episode.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening, mm-hmm. as always, and follow us on our Instagram.
@behind_thecrime. Also, if you have any suggestions or things you want us to talk about, you could leave something in the comments there, DM us, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be really interesting.
Any topics or like themes for episodes, mm-hmm. or any cases that you want us to cover.
Or if you want us to try something different, like talk about something instead of a case, try, you know, if you have any ideas.
Yeah. But I think that wraps us up.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.